Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Ashmir Salashon class learning. We will begin with the Tefillah Al Hadibur, please. Ribbono Sha'olam, Yehi Ratzon Mefanecha, Al Racham Venechat, Al Racham Vechanan, Shetizekeni Haim Vechol Yom, Lishmar Piyu, Lishonim Rivashon Haru Rechilis, Vazahar Meledaber, Afila Alish Yachay, Vekol Shekena Kal Yisrael, Om Lisraim Amigul Asav Shal Kol Shbaruch Hu, Vazahar Meledaber, Divrei Sheker Chanufa, Machol Kes Kaas, Gaivo Nos, Tvarim Habanas, Panim Beitzonos, Vechol Dibur Asr, Zakeni Shlo Dabra Kim Dabra Hatzarich, Linani Gufi Vinafshi, Viukama, Saiba Dibrai, the Shem Shamayim, Amen Vamain. We are learning as a Chos Aliyah Neshama for Tvi Gershon Banyol Vachana Alav Hashem. May his Neshama have a continuous Aliyah in the merit of the Torah learning that we share and in the merit of the Avoda of striving mightily to better our Dibur, and also with Alyssa's permission, Chos for Besoros Tovos and So welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a meaningful few weeks. So last time, we were still in the Gemara. We're learning very halachic-based the past few classes, Masechet Arachin, and based on the teachings in the Gemara, we are understanding more and more details when it comes to Shmiras Halashon. So last time we learned in depth that it's not so pashut, that just because the person is in front of you, it does not mean you're allowed to say whatever you want. And you can say, well, they're here, so I could say it. It doesn't work like that. Like the Gemara says, Amar Rabbah, I'm not going into all the insights we spent time last class, learning, but just to remind ourselves what the Gemara last said. Excuse me, because the Gemara continues based on this teaching. Amar Rabbah, Rabbah said, Kol milsa dimis amra ba'ape mara. Anything said in the presence of the person being discussed, leis ba'mishum lishna bish, involves no prohibition on the account of lashon hara. So that is a cryptic and a short statement of the Gemara that needs much interpretation. And last class, we delved into many of the different interpretations of the commentators and halachic deciders in the Sefer False Facts and True Rumors by Rabbi Daniel Feldman, where he delves into this topic in depth. But we have concluded that just because the person is there, it does not mean that you have a license to speak freely about them or to say lashon hara about them. It is still asur. So continuing in the Gemara, so that was Rabbah's teaching. So Rabbah said, anything said in the presence of the person being discussed involves no prohibition on the account of lashon hara. Abba Amar Le, Abaya said to Rabbah, how can that be? Kol Shekein, you would think it should be prohibited all the more so. Chutzpah v'lishna bisha, because the speaker is now guilty of both chutzpah and lashon hara. So Rabbah said anything said in the presence of the person is not lashon hara, involves no prohibition on the count of lashon hara. But Abaye said to Rabbah, how could that be? Kol shekein, you might think it would be all the more so because you are guilty now of two transgressions, and they are chutzpah. On the one hand, you have a degree of chutzpah, you have a degree of halbanas panim, you have a degree of leitzanus, v'lishna bisha, and also lashon hara. So I'm going to now, the footnote in the article Gemara says, he may be also guilty of ona'ah Dvarim, which is verbal oppression, verbal ragging, and being malbim pnecha veiro berabim, embarrassing his fellow. So this is Abaya's objection to Rabbah's teaching. So Rabbah now answers Abaya. Amar le Rabbah said to Abaya, Ana ki Rabbi Yossi Sivrili. I concur with the view of Rabbi Yossi. What is the view of Rabbi Yossi? De Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, Mi amai. In all my days, lo amarti davar. I never said a matter. V'chazarti l'acharai. And I had to turn around to see if the person was there, because I would have said the same thing if he was there, if he was not there. So Rabbah says, Tabai, I understand your objection, but I hold like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, in all my days, I never said anything and had to turn around. Oi, was the person there? Why? Because I would have said the same thing if they were there and if they were not there, meaning I had nothing to worry about. I'm now going to quote from the Art Scroll footnote. This is the end of Masechet Arachin Tes Vav Amud Beis, right at the end of the Amud, and here is the footnote. Okay? When Rabbah says there's no prohibition, and by the way, this footnote, some of it's a review from what we learned last week in Rabbi Daniel Feldman. It's a much shorter footnote than all the opinions we went into last time. When Rabbah says there's no prohibition of lashon hara, when it's uttered in the presence of the person spoken about, which is the question of the hour, is there in fact a prohibition? Rabbah is teaching a fundamental limitation of the prohibition from Parshas Kedoshim, lo se leich Achil ba'amecha. You should not go about gossiping. You should not be a peddler of gossip amongst your people. The Pasuk defines Rachil in Sefer Yirmiyahu, and we spoke about this last week. Yirmiyahu says they are talebearers, copper and iron. So one who is a talebearer is represented by both copper and iron. What does that mean? The speaker of the Lashon Hara is two-faced. They appear bright and friendly like copper when speaking to the subject, but dark and malevolent like iron when speaking about him to others. So it represents a two-faced characteristic, because generally when a person speaks Lashon Hara, when he is a rachil, when he's a peddler of gossip, he appears to be your friend when you meet him in the street, and he's all friendly and warm and kind, and then behind your back he is dark and malevolent and cruel when he speaks about you. Two-facedness is a defining characteristic of Lashon Hara. If the speaker makes the negative statement in the subject's presence, or he would make it in his presence, he's not two-faced, and that's why his statement is not considered Lashon Hara. So you could say he has other problems. Maybe he has problems with his character, problems with midos tovos, problems with respect for other people, but it's not defined strictly as Lashon Hara because he isn't two-faced, Taka. He's not one thing to your face and one thing behind your back. He is who he is. The Maharal agrees that Lashon Hara spoken in the presence of the subject is not defined as Lashon Hara. Although there are several teachings in the words of the stages that seem to contradict this, they all deal with negative statements that are false or inaccurate. So the difference if what you said in the presence of the person is true, a negative, or false, a negative. If someone would be willing to make a true negative statement in the subject's presence, that is not considered the classic definition of Lashon Hara according to Rashi. So again, you might be over, like Rabba says, on chutzpah, you'd be over on chutzpah. With the footnote adds, based on the Chafetz Chaim, you'd be over on onas dvarim, verbal oppression, ma'abim pnei chaveiro, but are you over on the classic definition of Lashon Hara? First of all, you're not two-faced, because you're saying what you're saying. Second of all, it's a true statement, and you're saying it in front of the person. Their definition of Lashon Hara. Concludes the Art Scroll footnote. Zerah Chaim concludes that whatever the validity of the above approach, according to the Rambam, the prohibition of Lashon Hara applies even in regard to true statements, even in the presence of the subject. So the Rambam concludes, however, that Lashon Hara applies even if the statement is true, and even in the presence of the person, and Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah indicate as much as well. Therefore, concludes the last sentence of the Art Scroll footnote here, one should adhere strictly to the Chavetz Chaim's halachic position. One should adhere. So there is definitely a difference of opinion of what exactly you're over. And as we have seen between last class and this morning so far, not everyone holds it is the strict definition of Lashon Hara if you make a true negative statement in the presence of the person. There is machlokas regarding how you would classify that statement. However, the Rambam rules clearly that the prohibition of Lashon Hara applies even in regard to true statements and even in the presence of the person being spoken about. Tosfos or Rabbeinu Yonah indicate as much as well. Therefore, one should adhere strictly to the Chavetz Chaim's halachic position that a negative comment that one would have said in the presence of the subject, or did say in the presence of the subject, is deemed Lashon Hara in the fullest sense. So that's the conclusion of the Chavetz Chaim. Yes, there are other opinions, and even if you want to say it's not Lashon Hara in the strictest sense, you are still guilty of other transgressions of sins of speech, but the Chavetz Chaim holds halachically you should, as much as possible, not say even a true negative statement on in front of the person, because you are over on Lashon Hara. I'm going to quote two stories from Rabbi Tzinkanievsky, Allah HaShalom, a tzaddikus in our time. Actually, that's sort of a pun, because her grandfather was known as the tzaddik in our time, the tzaddik in Jerusalem of Ari Levine. Zecher tzaddikim ukdoshim levracha. Okay, so I think these stories illustrate this concept to us nicely, right? Okay. I'm sure many of you have this book, Rabbi Tzinkanievsky, A Legendary Mother to All. I'm quoting from page 260 for your reference to page 261, okay? Two incidents where the Rabbitson Kanievsky became really upset. two and a woman at Tzedekes who was so even keel and loving and accepting of others, two times that she became really upset. The first incident occurred one morning after Rav Eliyahu finished his learning session with Rav Chaim Shlita and was eating breakfast in the house, as he did before heading back to Petach Tikva. Bina, they put that in quotes, it's a pseudonym, it's not the real name, a girl with a conspicuous stuttering problem, was speaking to the Robertson, to Robertson Kanievsky. Another girl, a visiting relative, was imitating Bina in the presence of the Robertson and right in front of Bina herself. So I think that this is a perfect, sad, illustrative example of what the Gemara is talking about. And we know that everything Chazal teaches applies in our day and age and can be understood in our day and age and in our time. So here you have this Bina, it's a made-up name, it's in quotations, a girl with a noticeable stuttering problem speaking to the Rabbitin. Another woman, girl, visiting the relative, was imitating Bina in the presence of the Rabbitin and in the presence of Bina herself. The Rabbitin became very agitated and motioned to her relative to stop right away. When the relative did not stop and she continued imitating the girl, the Rabbitin cried out, "Stop embarrassing her!" Exclamation mark. She hugged Bina, brought her into the bedroom, and she spent a long time talking. She was weeping, crying. The Rabbitin said, "It must be so hard to deal with people making fun of you when you stutter. I am so sorry that you were embarrassed in my own home." She then was in touch with doctors and therapists to try and figure out how to help Bina correct her speech impediment. But here you have a clear example that just because something negative is said in the presence of the person being spoken about or even being spoken to does not mean that sin of speech has not been transgressed. In this case, clearly, like Abaya says, chutzpah v'lishna bisha, you are guilty even more so in the presence of the person, not only of lashon hara, which literally translates as negative speech, but chutzpah. And here you have, like the article footnote says, guilty of onas dvarim, verbal wrongdoing, amal b'mpnei chavero, embarrassing your friend in public. There was another occasion on which the Rabbitin, again Rabbitin Kanievsky, Allah Shalom, really lost her composure. One summer morning, a group of secular Israeli women came to daven late in the Letterman show and to speak to Rabbitin Kanievsky after davening. One of the girls was dressed in a completely non-sneistic fashion, and she was walking home with the Rabbitin after davening. A bachur, who learned in one of the nearby yeshivos, noticed the girl's inappropriate attire and began screaming at her and insulting her aloud. "Shame on you. Go back to Tel Aviv where you belong. How dare you come to Bnei Brak dressed like this?" he shouted. The Rabbitin was startled and she shouted back at the boy, "Who asked you? Have you no shame? You are malbim pnei chaveiro berabim, embarrassing someone in public, insulting someone? Is that how you give tochacha?" "I will tell you something," said the Rabbitin, "that I've never told any of the many, many people who frequent our home. You are the only person not welcome to come and visit. If you come to my house, I will tell you what I have never told anyone before. You must leave my home." Meanwhile, the Rabbitin hugged and comforted the second girl. So the girl was not just Sanua, and she came to the wife of the God of Hador, and she came to the holy city of Bnei Brak, and this boy was heckling her. And the Rabbitin said, and it was in front of the girl, and he was speaking about her right in front of her, and it was a true negative statement. And the Rabbitin is one of two times when she became visibly agitated and terribly upset, and she screamed back at him, saying, "You are malbim pnei chaveo berabim. This is not how we give tochacha. You are never welcome in our home." Meanwhile, the Rabbitin hugged and comforted the secular girl. "She was so distraught by what happened," continues the story, "that she went into the room when Rav Chaim was about to begin learning with Rav Eliyahu Mann, and she began crying aloud. 'Is it possible,' she said, 'I did an aveira, which would cause this overzealous bachur to act that way in front of me,' she cried." She was weeping in front of Rav Chaim for 5 minutes. She sat down on her bed. It says here she took anti-anxiety medication to calm down. For the rest of the day, she remained so upset that someone who had come to her for chizuk I've been so publicly insulted and humiliated. So clearly, just because a true negative statement is made in the presence of the person, it does not mean we have a license to speak. And we learn from here how important it is not to also take the statement of Chazal at face value, but why we need the commentators to explain, because someone might open this up and say, oh, Rabbah says anything made in the presence of the person being spoken about is not Lashon Hara. And as we have seen from a class and a half, that is absolutely not to be taken at face value. The commentators have many different opinions, but according to all, you have at least some degree of transgression, and according to the Chafetz Chaim's halachic position, a negative comment made in the presence of the subject is deemed to be Lashon Hara in the fullest sense. I think this has a lot of application when it comes to children in the home. Sometimes we apply our learning to people outside of our home, but Rav Pam held that it was a terrible aveira to tease children, but I think that sometimes this applies to children in the home as well. Just because the child is present, just because the child is at the table, just because the whole family is together, and it is still not permissible to say something that is a true statement that could be either misconstrued or have negative consequence or teasing at the expense of the person being spoken about, just because everyone in the family knows it, etc., etc. It could be terrible transgression of Lashon Hara, or at the very minimum, chutzpah, ona'as dvarim, halbanas panim, leitzana. So it's obviously very halachically applicable, practical to everyday lives, and something to keep in mind. Okay? So that is the follow-up with additional teachings to last class. So now let me tell you the next topic the Gemara moves into, which is just as complex. One small cryptic statement in the Gemara, which leads to much halachic discussion, which we are probably going to spend this class and at least the next class talking about. So let's go again. Amar Rabba, I'm going back, because I wanted to show you the flow of the Gemara. Amar Rabba, okay, so we're still on Erechin Tesvav Amad Beis, moving into Tes Zayin Amad Aleph. Amar Rabba, kol milsa dimis amra ba'apei mara. Rabba said, anything said in the presence of the person being discussed, leis ba mishum lishna bisha, involves no prohibition on the account of Lashon Hara. Amar Le, Abai said to Rabba, how could that be? Kol Shekein, you would think it would be even more serious, even more sinful to say something in the presence of the person. Why? Chutzpah v'dishna bisha. I'm not saying with the footnotes now. I'm not saying anything from Rabbi Feldman, just the pshat of the Gemara. Why? Because you're over on chutzpah and on Lashon Hara. However, Rabba told Abaya, Amar Le, Ane ki Rabbi Yossi sevira li. I concur with the view of Rabbi Yossi. De Amar Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi said, Mi amai, in my entire life, all my days, lo amarti davar, I never said a matter, v'chazar ti la'achara, I never had to turn around and say, Oi! Didn't so-and-so hear me? I was just speaking about them. I can't believe they're in the room. I never had to do that, said Rabbi Yossi. Why? I would have said the same thing, even if he was there, and that is how Rabba holds. Okay, what is the next teaching in the Gemara moving into Maseches Arachin Tes Zayin Amalf? The Aleph. The Gemara says, Amar. The next teaching is, ready? Anything said in the presence of three people or more, there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara involved in repeating it further. The Lashon is, Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Rabba Bar Rav Huna said, Kol Misa Dimis Amra Ba'ape Tilasa. Ape is in the face of, Tilasa is three. Anything said in the presence of three people can be assumed to be public knowledge. Leis Ba Mishum Lishna Bisha. There is no prohibition of Lashon Hara involved in repeating it further. This is going to lead to a much halachic discussion. Why not? Mai tama, why not? Anything said in the presence of three people, there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara involved in repeating it further. The Gemara says, mai tama, why not? Chavarch, chavara, isle, your friend has a friend, who he will tell. The chavar de chavarach, chavara, isle, and your friend's friend has a friend who he will tell. It will be so wildly circulated. When someone says in the presence of three people, you have a friend, your friend has a friend, your friend's friend has a friend. I'm not making fun. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? And now everybody's friends. And think today of technology and on Facebook, we call it friends. So once you post something in the presence of three people, there's no problem repeating it further. Why not? Because whoever said in the presence of three people, your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and the whole world's going to know. So Josh Leiber by Feldman had a whole section on, can you say something in the presence of the person isn't considered Lashon Hara? He also addresses at length this teaching. This is one sentence in the Gemara. Something said in the presence of three is not considered Lashon Hara to repeat it. This is very, very, very relevant. Okay, with COVID, today we're not congregating after shul. Some people might be, but I don't know. I'm still in quarantine. Someone texted me yesterday. She says, when do you get out of Chevrim? I said, I don't know. But many people, I hope, are still being careful, not congregating in groups. We know how virulent the virus is and how it spreads like wildfire, just like speech. Why am I telling you this? Oh, because in general, when we go to weddings, things are said. When we congregate after shul, when we meet people for lunch, when you have a women's get-together, things are said in the presence of three people or more. So is it permitted to repeat what has been said in the presence of three people or more? The Gemara seems to indicate that there is no problem with this. Why? Because your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend's friend has a friend, and everyone has a friend, and so it's going to be told all over. So let us go into Rabbi Feldman to understand the halachic ramifications, limitations, and parameters of this teaching. I'm going to repeat the teaching one more time. Amar Rabba bar Rav Huna, kol milsa dimis amra ba'apay telasa. Anything said in the presence of three people or more, which you therefore assume, like the art school notes, is now public knowledge, right? It's not a secret. Someone told me something yesterday. They told me, you absolutely cannot tell this to anybody, not your husband. I said, well, I'm told not to say anything. I don't say a word to anyone. I really don't. You should just know, if you've ever been one of those people who told me things and you asked me not to repeat, I do not repeat it at all. But anything said, that's not when you tell one person. Anything said in the presence of three or more, leispa mishum lishna bisha, there's no prohibition of lashon hara involved in repeating further. So is that correct? If I go to a wedding and someone announces something at the table of eight women, or if I'm standing with a group of five women after shul, or if a couple ladies went out to lunch and someone says something at the table, this happens all the time, about a mutual friend's child, can I go now and repeat it? Very practical, applicable. So let's go to Rabbi Daniel Feldman, False Facts and True Rumors, Lashon Hara in Contemporary Culture. He is, again, if you're just joining us perhaps for the first time, listening to this year for the first time, Rabbi Feldman is one of the YU Roshei Yeshivos and also a prolific author. And he's also the Rav of a shul in New Jersey. I don't remember which one. Okay. Lashon Hara that is public knowledge. Page 159 and forward. I reviewed this chapter I'm about to teach you at least four times. Okay, because it's very halachic, and we daven for siyata d'shmaya to make sure we understand what we are learning and what we are teaching. Subheading. So the heading is Lashon Hara, that is public knowledge. Subheading, in the presence of three. Ape telasa. Ape, the face, telasa is three. Introducing the factor of publicity into the discussion of Lashon Hara has a multi-directional effect. What we're really talking about is publicity. From the perspective of the speaker, okay, the woman at the table at the wedding who's announcing something about your mutual friend who's not at the wedding, about her child, who's in the Shidduch Parsha, okay? She says something in public. From the perspective of the speaker, the woman who just spilled the beans, if you will, it seems undeniable. It should be, the greater the number of listeners, what would you think? The greater the Avera. That's right. That's where the worse it is to just, Alyssa just said. That's exactly right. If it's Lashon Hara to tell something to one person, isn't it even worse to announce it to eight people at the wedding? So from the perspective of the speaker, writes Rabbi Feldman, it seems undeniable that the greater the number of listeners, the greater the Avera you just did. If it's bad to speak gossip or slander or rechilas or malpe pnei chaveira or motzi shemra to one person, it would seem logical that it is far worse to do so to a group of people. So now I didn't just tell something to one person, but it's after shul, and I come outside, I'm talking about that woman and her child to five people. Isn't that 5 degrees greater of sin? However, when considering the item, in other words, what you're speaking about, publicity, paradoxically, has the opposite effect. The more well-known the information, the less harm involved in repeating it. Why? Because people already know. Taken together, these two factors create somewhat of a paradox. The larger the audience of listeners, the greater the transgression from the perspective of the speaker. But as the news spreads, remember the Gemara says, why is there no problem? Because your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and everyone has a friend, so you assume it's going to be. And today with technology, it's going to be around the world in seconds. And it's funny, because not so funny, actually. But I know you probably can't see over Zoom. But I was contemplating it this morning. I prepared yesterday, and then I reviewed again this morning during my breakfast, that the cover of this book is designed not with speech bubbles, but with iMessage bubbles, a logo of the World Wide Web, logo of emails, images of cell phones and computers. So as soon as you pick up the book, what you learn that is in contemporary culture, this is even more dangerous, because today in the public of three, you could say that anything posted on a WhatsApp group, not an individual, is already said in public. The larger the audience of listeners, the greater the transgression. But as the news spreads further, further offense seems to lose their sting, because you're not introducing something that people didn't know. You're not telling a juicy piece of gossip. Once people know it, everybody knows it. As a question of Jewish law, so according to halacha, both directions must be considered. In other words, the direction of the effect of the speaker, do you have a greater degree of transgression because you've said it to more people, as well as the fact that as the news spreads, it seems to diminish the effect of spreading it further. What effect is there on the transgression of Lashon Hara? What effect is there on the sin of Lashon Hara when it takes place in front of a larger audience? And this, again, not during COVID days, but in terms of in-person, is very shaykh to our lives. But even during COVID days, it's very shaykh, because when you think of WhatsApp groups and WhatsApp chats. And conversely, what mitigation, if any, comes from the fact that the news is far from a secret because it's public knowledge? So why can't I retell it? In fact, the Gemara seems to indicate that I can retell because it's public knowledge. Both or either of these questions, says Rabbi Feldman, are addressed by a single enigmatic statement in the Gemara, which is the statement that we just heard. Rabbi Feldman said it appears only twice in the Talmud. Once in Maseches Bava Basra Lamed Tes, and one where we are up to Maseches Arachin Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. It is brief in formulation, the statement of the Gemara, but it has inspired much analysis and much debate as to the correct interpretation and impact. The commentaries of the medieval era take radically different stances in terms of translating and explaining this teaching from the Gemara. So we have to learn that just like we learn Torah Shebichtav, and you can't learn Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaalpeh, you will totally have the wrong message. You'll be like the Tzedukim Chas V'Shalom. We cannot learn Torah Shebichtav without the explanation of Torah Shebaalpeh. So too, you can't learn Torah Shebaalpeh without the explanation of the commentators. It becomes very dangerous because you are going to misunderstand the teachings of Chazal. The commentaries of the medieval era take radically different stances to explain this teaching of the Gemara, which is Ba'apei Tolasa, something said in public. May it be repeated? Is it Lashon Hara? What is the transgression? And thus, provoke somewhat of a question as to what legal conclusions can be drawn. Like I said last time, I am not reading every sentence or every paragraph of the section. I went through it and chose what to share with you. The enigmatic statement of the Talmud in question is, anything said in the presence of three, Ape Talasa, in the presence of three people or more, there is no prohibition of Lashon Hara involved. And I quoted Lashon of the Gemara before. In the presence of three is an indication. Why would you think that it's no prohibition of Lashon Hara? It's an indication the item is either publicly known. When someone says something in the presence of three people, you assume that it's public knowledge, or soon to be publicly known, because if you say it in the presence of three people, right? That's four people at the very minimum who now know it. If it wasn't public knowledge until this moment, by the time you said in the presence of four, it's going to be public knowledge. Since, like the Gemara says, your friend has a friend, he's quoting it from the Gemara, and the friend's friend has a friend, we can assume, like the Gemara does, that which is known to three people will inevitably become public knowledge. Somehow this fact mitigates or eliminates the prohibition of Lashon Hara. The question, however, is, how does this fact mitigate or eliminate the prohibition of Lashon Hara? Intuitively, You would have thought the polar opposite. You would have thought intuitively, if it's an offense to speak Lashon Hara to one person, the offense would be magnified exponentially with an increase in the number of listeners. So if I say something that's usher to one person, and then I stand up in a room and I say it in front of 50 people, isn't it much worse to say it in front of 50 people? The Gemara seems to point that it is not. This is, however, the offense you would think would be magnified exponentially with an increase in the number of listeners, says Rabbi Feldman. This is explicitly stated by the Chofetz Chaim. Rabbi Feldman has a lot of footnotes that give you the source for everything he quotes. He is quoting here from the Chofetz Chaim Laws of Lashon Hara, Chapter 2, Halacha 1, where the Chofetz Chaim says, if it's an Hitaka says, if it's an offense to speak Lashon Hara to one person, that offense is magnified exponentially with an increase in the number of listeners. Now, we have to understand this teaching of the Gemara. Anything said in the presence of three, there was no prohibition of Lashon Hara, because your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and we assume it's now public knowledge. How do we understand this? There are essentially four different positions, says Rabbi Feldman, amongst the classic authorities as to how to understand this Talmudic statement and the concept in and of itself. Four different positions. How do we apply this? How do we understand this? What does it mean to me? If I was one of the three, can I go repeat it? If someone posted something on a WhatsApp group and, you know, there's 20 people on the WhatsApp group, can I forward it to somebody? I was thinking to myself, and he doesn't seem to address it from when, again, I read this learned through the section at least four times. He doesn't seem to address it. But what about forwarding news articles that are Lashon Hara? Okay. If it's on Yeshiva World News, I'm not trying to say, I shouldn't have even said the name of a, whatever. If it's on a website, can I forward it? Everybody knows. It's public knowledge. You couldn't have more public knowledge than putting something on the internet. Can I forward it? Certainly said in the presence of more than three. Now you can not assume it's public knowledge. You could state with definitive certainty that this is public knowledge. So does that give me the right to repeat it, to post it in another group, to forward it to somebody else? So this cryptic, again, like Rabbi Feldman calls it, single enigmatic statement that appears twice in the Gemara, which is brief in formulation, inspires much analysis and debate. Here we go. The first two positions into understanding ape telasa, in the face of three, which means public, applies to the listener of the information. First two interpretations apply to the listener. Latter two positions apply to the speaker. So we're going to begin with what is the obligation or the responsibility of the listener when something is said in public. So again, excuse me, you're at a wedding. You're one of the 10 people at the table. You're not the speaker. You're a listener. You're sitting there. And someone comes and they announce this in a table full of 10 people. They're person number one. They're person number 10. Everybody at the table just heard, you're the listener. So the first two halachic positions dictate the responsibility or what the listener is now obligated or may not do. So the first position, which is proposed by the Rambam and Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, the Rashbam, 1085 to 1158. So the Rambam and the Rashbam hold, the meaning of this Talmudic passage is that the members of the public, represented by the three who represent the general population, are permitted to repeat what they have heard. So before you start running, just to think that whatever someone said at the wedding, you can now go tell everybody else. Wait. Okay, the first position applies to the listener. I was a person who heard. I'm standing outside after a show and someone says something about Mrs. X. I'm sitting at the wedding. Someone posts something on a WhatsApp group that seems to be Lashon Hara. I didn't post it. I read it. I heard it. The Rambam and the Rashbam seem to say that this prohibition in the Gemara, this teaching in the Gemara, the three, sat in the presence of three, represent the general population. They're permitted to repeat what they've heard. Rabbi Daniel Feldman writes, this poses a fundamental problem. It presents a question of how the information was conveyed in the first place. Further, it creates the unusual and surprising conclusion that the commission of a transgression, once it happens, allows the damage to be continued. So once a transgression has been done, you didn't say it. In the presence of three doesn't really literally represent three. It means the general population of the public. It seems to say, once this has happened, the damage may continue and you can repeat it. The damage has been done and I didn't do the damage. Moreover, says Rabbi Feldman, this appears to be a license to spread negative information simply because it will be spread anyway. Well, the other seven people at the table are going to go tell, so why can't I go tell? It's going to be spread. It's certainly public knowledge. So can I now tell it? Everybody saw it online in the news. Well, why can't I post it in my WhatsApp group? Says Rabbi Feldman, this seems to be comparable to allowing one to steal property left unguarded. It will be eventually stolen anyway, so why can't I steal it? Is that what we're saying? Unfortunately, you see it in the news all the time, the secular news, that especially this time of year, when people are sending packages all over. My packages left on doorsteps, not taken in right away, are stolen. Oh, they know. Okay, so Lolina, we shouldn't be the ones taking the package and we shouldn't be the ones having the package taken from us. So Rabbi Feldman says, why, just because someone said the Lashon Hara, are you allowed to spread it further? Isn't that comparable to allowing one to steal property left unguarded? It'll eventually be stolen, so why can't I steal? Doesn't the Torah say you shall not steal? So why am I allowed to steal just because it's unguarded? It'll eventually be stolen by somebody else, so I should be the one to steal it? How does the fact that an offense will eventually be committed by someone else make it permissible to me, the listener, to commit the offense? Just because someone else is going to go spread the Lashon Hara, why am I allowed to spread Lashon Hara? What does the Gemara mean? And according to the Rambam and the Rashbam, this Ape Telasai is not about the speaker, but about the listeners, the three who represent the general population, the public. Furthermore, as we have seen, says Rabbi Feldman, Lashon Hara, and here we come to an important nakuda, involves a negativity of character. Not something we've spoken about in our learning, even though we didn't directly quote Rabbi Feldman's section on that. The speaker of Lashon Hara has something fundamentally broken, corrupt, in their personality, that they could speak negatively. In addition to the damage your words inflict on the subject, there is a negativity of character in the speaker. So, even if it could be accepted that relating public information will not increase damage, it's not going to increase damage if I forward the article because the whole world knows the story. It's total public, but ape telasa. However, wouldn't the speaker still be indulging in an unsavory character trait? Aren't still I over on the tikkun hamidos, or the lack, I should say, of tikkun hamidos? Doesn't it indicate something negative about me as a person that I have chosen to spread public information? It's public. You spreading it is not going to cause further harm. Everybody knows. Doesn't mean I'm allowed to spread it. How is that element mitigated by the inevitable spread of the Lashon Hara? So even though it's going to be spread, how does it mitigate the fact that I am the one who spread it, which is a poor indication on my character? This, a certain instance comes to my mind that happened last year, unfortunately, Rahmana Litzlan, when there was a terrible scandal, if you will, in the local Frum community. Horrific. About a certain family. So just because everyone knows and everybody knew, am I allowed to spread the information further? It seems like yes, as a listener, but what about my character? Isn't there something very deficient in me and the fact that I want to spread this piece of gossip, albanas panim, onas dvarim, leitzanus further? In addition, and he puts this sentence in parentheses. In addition, writes Rabbi Feldman, the people who heard the item, okay, again, the listeners, might be observant of the Lashon Hara prohibition, in which case the information might not spread. So you also have to assume, let's say, all the 10 people at that table learn this class every other Monday morning for over six years, I think, Kenayin Ahara. Should be schutz for Arichos Yamin Vashanim. So, So, let's say you don't have reason, you should assume that all the other, there was the speaker, you're one listener, the other eight people at the table are very observant in the lachos of Lashon Hara, they're not going to tell. So what gives me the right to tell if I assume that they're not going to tell. Then the information won't become public. In fact, the Chofetz Chaim rules, this license to tell something that was said in public, the Chofetz Chaim teaches, and keep in mind, again, he gives all the sources, and don't forget this whole shiur is based on Kuntzus Chofetz HaShmir by the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim rules, this license to that a listener can repeat what was said in public is non-operative when the listeners are God-fearing. When listeners are Yirei Shamayim, this license is not operative because we believe, the Chofetz Chaim is teaching, that Yirei Shamayim will not repeat the information even if it's public knowledge. Or this license is not operative when they are unlikely to spread the information. When would that be, for example, if they're close relatives? So that takes another factor into consideration. Let's say the information was said in a group of family members. Now it's public. It's three people who represent the general population. But there are two times, as the Chofetz Chaim, that you assume the information will not become more public just because your friend is a friend and your friend's friend has a friend. That is one. If the people are Yirei Shamayim, if they're God-fearing people, you're sitting at a table with, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva's wives, you have to assume that they are not going to repeat the information. They're God-fearing. So then that license to repeat is not operative. And furthermore, the license to repeat is not operative if you know that the people there won't spread the tale. An example of that would be if they're all family members. And I'm not talking about families when there's machlokas, when there's dissent, and Rachman al-San, they don't get along. In a beautiful family situation, hopefully a normal family situation, when people do get along, you have to assume that that information will not be spread. And therefore, you as a listener are not allowed to further peddle the information. Another objection could be raised from the rule against accepting Lashon Hara. Would not spreading the information be a form of acceptance or worse? So there's also an Azhara not to be a Makaba Lashon Hara. You cannot be a Makaba Lashon Hara, right? There's a prohibition to speak. There's a prohibition to accept. By spreading the information, you seem to have accepted this statement of Lashon Hara, but you're not allowed to accept the statement of Lashon Hara. So that's another objection could be raised from the rule against accepting Lashon Hara. You can't be a Mekabel. Would not spreading the information be a form of acceptance? The fact that I'm now going and telling it over means I've accepted the Lashon Hara. And then I've been over on some degree of sin as well. To some extent, says Rabbi Feldman, these questions are addressed by the Rambam's formulation. Remember, the Rambam and the Rashbam, the first opinion say this ape telasa and the presence of three applies to the listener, the person who heard, the public, the person who represents the general population. However, when the Rambam codifies this principle the laws of personal development. When the Rambam, I was just looking at the footnote, I hope I quoted it right, it's a long footnote. When the Rambam codifies this principle, he adds a clause not found in the Gemara. The clause is, as long as he does not intend to spread the matter further. So the Gemara says, anything said in the presence of three may be repeated because it's not in the prohibition of Lashon Hara, because your friend has a friend, your friend's friend has a friend, but the Rambam adds a clause. As long as he, meaning the listener, does not intend to spread the matter further. The Rambam apparently assumes this permission to tell over what has been said in public is only for an incidental reference in the context of a general discussion, not specifically geared towards item Lashon Hara. So you're not spreading it further in a conversation geared towards spreading Lashon Hara. It's an incidental reference in a general conversation. With this brief addition, the Rambam is teaching us as follows. One is, he does not allow committing an offense that has not yet taken place. So if the offense has not yet taken place, you cannot be the spreader. He only allows discussing the matter when it comes up, without intentional dissemination. So if it comes up anyways, and you're not the one who brought up, and you do not intend to further spread the Lashon Hara, then it can be referenced, and presumably not adding at all to the degree which it is spread. So if everyone knows, and everyone knows, but if everyone does not know, the Rambam says, you may not add to the degree to which it was spread. This might also lead to the conclusion that if public discussion of the matter has subsided, people aren't talking about it anymore. They're on to the next piece of news, Rahmana Litzan. And Bad Hawk is over. It's all. That was last week. No one's talking about it anymore, but you're the listener. You heard it in public. Once the public discussion of the matter has subsided, any permission to revive the topic must cease. So once again, like we saw last time, just because the Gemara says anything said in the presence of three involves no prohibition of Lashon Hara, because your friend has a friend and your friend's friend has a friend, it does not mean it is an automatic license to go ahead and start peddling the wares. It is very clear from our learning that that statement is unclear and lends itself to much discussion. We will, Be'ezra Hashem, continue our learning with this very same topic next time. May the shir bring aschus for an aliyah neshama, for Tzvi Gershon ben Yoel v'Chana Alav Hashalom. I wish you a wonderful day. We thank the Axelrod family for their dedication to this learning, and we shall av siyata d'shmaya, nitzor l'shon chameira, usvasecha medaber mirma. Shavu week and a day of besuros tovos. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol tov. Thank you.